This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week's episode is brought to you by our sponsor, themagicbookshop.com. Be sure to check out themagicbookshop.com if you are interested in any kind of books whatsoever, and you really should be. You know, Roger Klaus had told me many years ago that your best investment in magic is in books. And now, of course, that was when they still had VHS tapes and everything then, too, and DVDs and digital recordings and everything were not even envisioned, I guess, back then. But still, I believe that reading and books really are the key, because that's where you really sit down with the paper in front of you and you work through the tricks themselves. Anyhow, there are a lot of great books that are no longer available to us. They're out of print. They're very rare, hard to find. And if you'll go to themagicbookshop.com, there you can find some of these old books. Not everything, but he's got just a ton of collection, a ton of books, I should say, in his repository there. He said, I've got enough books. Actually, I can build another house. So help him deplete his stock, and you might even help him to increase his stock, because he's always looking for collections. So if you happen to have a book or more or a whole library that you'd like to dispose of, or you know somebody who is a widow or a widower who is looking to dispose of their magician's collection of books, then be sure to get in touch with Eric Citron over at themagicbookshop.com. Thank you, Eric, again for being our sponsor. And for those of you who are listening, he's got a special deal that is for listeners of The Magic Word. Whenever that you go to check out for any purchase, that you're going to get a 10% discount. Just put in the promo code Magic Word. That's all one word, no spaces, just Magic Word, all lowercase. So put that in, get your 10% discount, and thank you, Eric, and you can thank him too. Well, this week we're going to be talking with a friend of mine, Mercer Helms, who is a magician that may or may not necessarily be known to you. If you're a younger magician, probably not. If you're a younger magician, I seriously doubt that you ever even saw him perform. He was not one of those guys who ever performed at magic conventions, nor even attended local clubs, for that matter, but he was always keeping his head down and working in cruise ships and in clubs and in casinos, and for decades he had traveled with the late comedian Phyllis Diller, and he was her opening act with his fast-paced Dove act. And I say fast-paced, I mean, it really was fast-paced, and he would jump around. But I really got to know him whenever that we worked together at the Magic Island here in Houston. He opened for me several times, and I would say open because that back in the old days, the Magic Island used to have two performers. They would have usually a Dove act, something that would be a silent act, just working to music. That'd be about 10 minutes or so, 10 to 12 minutes, and then the talking act, that'd be the what Scott Hollingsworth used to refer to as the furniture act. So those would be the ones who would come out with the illusions, or they would be comedians, usually a lot of guys who were working on cruise ships and things like that, that could come through and bring their stuff, or again, some guys who had larger stage shows. So they would fill it out and do a lot longer, but usually there was a silent act that opened, and many times whenever I was working there as the main act, then I say main act, actually I always kind of felt like that I was playing second fiddle to Mercer, because he was so professional and always fun to work with. And so I enjoyed talking with him on this podcast here this week, kind of renewing our friendship, because I haven't seen him for quite some years, actually. He had retired here to Houston many years ago, but as his health started to fail a little bit, then and he no longer started performing magic, he had moved into a retirement community, and his wife had passed some years ago, and then he had remarried another lovely lady, with whom he is living right now again here in Houston in a retirement home. And so I had a chance to finally get together and hook up with him and go over to his home there in the village and get a chance to talk with him about his history. And I think that a lot of the things that he's talking about, you will certainly enjoy this trip down memory lane. And some of you who do remember Mercer will enjoy this a lot. And also that it is from a kind of a time gone by. So please welcome my guest this week, Mr. Mercer Helms, here on The Magic Word.
Wow.
One of the big advantages of doing this podcast is I get an opportunity to chat with friends that I have known and worked with over the years, and getting to also reconnect with people that I may not have seen for a while. And that brings us to today's podcast with a friend that I've known and worked with in years past. And our paths have gone in different directions and such that we haven't had a chance really to get together until recently. And it was because of just, interestingly enough, a contact that someone had made to me through Facebook, Kerry Ross, who had said, "Hey, have you talked to Mercer Helms recently?" And I said, "No, but I know he lives here in Houston." And so I contacted Walter Blaney. He said, "Yeah, here's Mercer's number. Give him a call." And so I did. And the next thing is that I got together with him. And Mercer, by the way, for those of you who don't know, who might be younger in magic, you will get to meet a good friend here today, and he'll become a good friend of yours. He was a tremendous dove worker, and he even had a bit part in a movie one time back in Los. What was the name of the movie then? Do you remember?
Oh, my gosh. It was The Alien or something like
something
that.
Something like that. Yeah. That he played a part of a mysterious magician in a window or something, I think. Or,
yeah, I was a demonstration magician in the window of one of the magic shops in L.A.,
Los Angeles.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was a short piece, and it was all pantomime. You know, the ball, the cups and balls, basically. Everything disappears. Then everything disappears.
Right. Didn't have a talking part. It was just kind of a cameo part.
Yeah.
It was, yeah. But then also, one of the things that you may not know about Mercer is how that he had opened for Phyllis Diller for a long number of years. Opening, as I said, for her. And for those of you who don't know who Phyllis Diller is, we'll talk a little bit about her then as well.
Oh,
and,
yes.
And her life then as well. He had been married, in fact, to Phyllis's daughter for a long number of years then as well, and worked in Vegas and around the world in different places. And so there are so many things for us to unpack and for you guys to learn about this great man and great magician and someone who has influenced a lot of people in so many ways, a comedy magician, a dove worker, and a good friend. Please welcome Mercer Helms. Hey there, Mercer.
Hi.
I'm so glad to reconnect over here with you. And you're looking good. For, what are you, 84?
86.
86.
Coming on.
Coming up.
Yeah.
Hey, I don't want to push you know, longer. So you're 85 right now.
Yes.
Yeah. So I mentioned the movie that was the only part. How did that come about, by the way?
I've just the film?
Yeah, the film that you do. Somebody, you'd have an agent that said, "Hey, we got to need some magician," or?
Well, somebody, actually, there's a studio called Lionsgate
yeah.
in Santa Monica.
Yeah.
It was a brand new studio at the time, and somebody said, "You ought to go down there. They're getting ready to do a play or a show, and you might have a part in it, a little one." I said, "Fine." So I went down and met them, and they were kind enough to hire me.
Yeah, and what year would that have been? Probably in the 70s?
I guess it would have been, yeah.
Sometime back then?
Maybe,
yeah.
Maybe 80s. I moved to Houston in 92.
Right.
So it probably 82, 3, 4.
Why did you come to Houston, of all places? I mean, when you've been working all over the world and whatnot, you know that Houston is not necessarily a place on most people's radar.
Well, I was operating the career, so to speak, out of Los Angeles. Had been there some 17, 18 years at the time, and my wife had a severe stroke.
Okay, Sherry.
Sherry. Mm-hmm. And she was in her, we were both in our 50s at the time. And so it was a very unusual and very difficult thing for her and for me. And I sort of became the caregiver over a long period of years. It took about, she had the stroke, I guess, in 87, at 89, 90, yeah. And it took us about 3 years to go broke. we were both too young for Medicare and, you know, the whole thing. And it finances and friends here that I knew. I believe I'd met you at the time. And
right.
I know I'd met Walter. And a few other Trixie and a few other
local magicians.
Yeah,
that's right.
Paul
Driscoll.
Yeah, and so we moved here, and that was 1992, and I've been here ever since. And of course, the my wife's condition precluded a lot of the heavy traveling, like the cruise ships mostly,
which and things you had been doing
weeks at a time away.
Right.
And I was able to hire people to come in for some of the shorter runs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but things with Phyllis, like a Canadian tour or something like that, would have been impossible.
Right, yeah. Right. Well, and then you'd met Scott Hollingsworth and started working at Magic Island about that time.
That's right, yeah. I knew people here, and I had played Magic Island, several times.
Before
we moved here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Scott Hollingsworth, good old Scott.
Yeah. You probably worked with Vic Kirk. You probably knew him from way back when, too.
Yeah, San Francisco guy, I think, yeah.
I was going to say you probably knew him from California. That was
No, I met him here.
Oh, it wasn't until you came here, okay.
Yeah, and he was at Magic Island,
mm-hmm.
and I haven't seen him since. Vic and his wife was a lovely lady.
Not Kathy, I'm trying to
think. Something like that, yeah. Very, very nice people.
He passed some years ago.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Yeah.
But he was one of those guys, again, is not a name that would necessarily be known by a lot of magicians necessarily, but I always thought of him as being kind of like a Johnny Thompson type of a person who had just an unlimited and uncanny mind for magic and things that he would do. And one of the things I remember on stage that his wife, darn, I can't remember her name. She was so lovely. They did a two-person mind-reading act way before, mm-hmm. the first one I ever saw do that. But occasionally on stage that she would hand him a different prop than what he was expecting. And he would just kind of give her a double take, but knew immediately, you know, from his repertoire what to do, and he went right into it. And
they were using mnemonics, I guess, a mnemonic code of some sort.
I think they had a mnemonic code that they had
used. Used to be the something. It was a very lengthy thing that was for sale.
Is that the Tommy?
Not exact. I'm trying to remember it. It was mnemonic, basically.
Sure.
And it was very, very thorough. I've seen it in use. I've forgotten who's doing it now, but very, very effective. Yeah.
One of my memories of our dinners at the Magic Island, which was, I think, one of the advantages of working at Magic Island, you know, to sit around with people like and others, you know, and we would kind of talk about who was working where and what they did and everything. But as we were talking, I remember Mick and Mary Kirk.
Oh, yeah, Mary.
So exactly. Vic and Mary were sitting there, and as we were having dinner, that Vic would be talking, and then partway through the conversation, while Mary was still eating, you know, that she'd have the fork up to her mouth, and she'll say, a comb, a necklace. You know, in other words, he was coding her, and she was picking up this code just unconsciously, you know, as they talked. It was such a natural thing for him, you know. It was just so amazing. And you did a lot of dove work and comedy work. I remember just the iconic picture of you in your promo photo that had a card that said, trust me. You know, on that. So it's kind of a funny thing.
Yeah. With sort of a sleazy grin.
Yes.
Taken from a high angle, the eyes go, trust me. Pointing to slate that had trust me written
on
it. Yeah.
Right. How did you come up with an idea like that? Was that yours or was that a photographer or did you take that in?
It was me, actually. Okay. I just took some clothes of various sorts down to a photo place in L.A. or out near Santa Monica, and he had been recommended, and it turned out fairly well. He did a half a dozen different poses of different sorts of things, you know.
So did you see yourself really more as a stage performer or as a comedian?
Comedy? Yes.
Okay.
The act that I did probably most, and the bread and butter act actually, was the 8-minute high speed, very visual dove act,
right?
I was very lucky because a friend of mine wrote the music for it.
Oh,
and
so it was all original music.
The whole thing was it had music that was accented in the right places, and it was really terrific to have it. But that was the bread and butter act. In fact, I would expand the act by, instead of just stepping one or two, I'd leap a long distance, you know, on a 40-foot stage, for example.
Yeah, right.
And gestures like waving became one, flapping yourself around, sort of. It was quite an interesting way to work. And one time I was invited to come to a television thing, I thought, in Chicago. I was working there somewhere, and it was at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And so I showed up, and it wasn't television, it was radio.
Okay.
And the area that I was to perform in was about 4 by 6 feet. Mm-hmm. And yeah. it was like working in a miniature
almost in a closet.
Yeah. But I've been on all the kinds of stages, and my favorite being thrust mm-hmm. stage, but mm-hmm. And in all sorts of venues. And
What was one of your favorite?
I like the clubs.
Okay.
Yeah, there was a wonderful club run by Joe Namath and down in South Florida,
okay.
One of the towns along there. That was really terrific. And of course, the ones that you really remember too are the ones in arenas as big as 5,000 people.
Wow.
That
right.
But I could make the act play because
right.
I just play it big and broad.
And it was still that
And it was all
act.
Silent. It was
yeah,
pantomime
silent.
Act
okay.
with the music.
But when you were working cruise ships, you had to do a longer act, I'm assuming, and then you did a talking act too?
Yeah. Okay. Did a talking act, did the, I had a 20-minute sort of comedy.
What was part of your routine back then? What'd you do?
Let me think. Pretty much the standards, things like
Bill and Lemon kind of thing, or no?
Actually, it was
Linking Rings.
Well, it was Terry, kind of a Terry Seabrook version of the
Bill?
Burn and Restored Bill.
Okay, yeah.
Like you've only been up here 10 minutes, and you've already had $100 worth of fun.
Yes, right, right.
You know,
yeah,
it was, and. It was just. It must have been just about every venue that I can think of. Really,
yeah.
Television. We'd be called out. I'd be called out for things like a Japanese TV series.
Mm-hmm.
Do the
mm-hmm.
act two or three different versions,
right.
And they'd pay you there for the full amount. You never
yeah.
got residuals for those, but
yeah. You just got paid one time.
One time, yeah. And,
well, you and I were talking just beforehand about Marvin Roy, and
oh, yeah.
he was the one who famously has been teaching others that you should have a silent act that you can work anywhere in the world.
Yeah,
which
exactly.
was what your case was.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
exactly. Mine was more difficult to travel than his because of the birds.
Birds. I would think that would be difficult, particularly more so, I don't know, whether back then or now, which would be more difficult, but trying to, boy, your cat is all over the microphone there. The fact that they had to be quarantined whenever that you're going from island to island or ship
yeah,
to ship.
Yeah, New Zealand and Australia were very difficult and very, very, very strict
uh-huh.
because they are islands total.
Yeah.
And something gets started there, it can mm-hmm. just take off like a house of fire,
yeah.
which is the wrong thing to say about Australia today.
Well,
poor
right now,
Australia.
Yeah,
oh, my God.
We're recording this now in early January, and
yeah.
there are massive fires that yeah. in Australia. That are.
But New Zealand was a wonderful, fun place. I
yeah.
mean, you had the Alps down mm-hmm. in the lower island. You had all sorts of Hawaiian-type tropics
yes.
in the upper island. And it was the people there were wonderful.
Yeah.
They didn't lock their cars.
Okay.
Or their houses.
Very trustworthy.
Yeah, they were like we were in the 50s.
In the old days, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, I remember
you'd leave
that.
The car
sure.
key in the
sure.
car.
Sure. Sure. Yeah.
And it was that sort mm-hmm. of place, laid back and just very, very nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And what someone else we were just talking about earlier was Ricky Dunn, that you had known Ricky from back in California as well and worked with him and traveled with him a lot.
I would see him out doing shows. I'd end up in a show, say, near the Ringling Brothers Museum down in Florida.
Sure.
And there's Ricky Dunn.
Yeah.
You know, we'd be on the show that night or something, and then I wouldn't see him for a while, then I'd go to Abbott's to do a lecture or something, and there's Ricky Dunn.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So he was in and out all the time, and he was working Magic Island.
Right.
And I was working it, too, at the time. I'd moved here by then,
uh-huh.
so I saw a good bit of him. He was in two or three times
a year. I remember
that
you opened for him. You would do, like, the 8-minute act, and then Ricky would come on and do, like, about a 30-minute
yeah.
pickpocket routine.
Yeah. Tinge hut.
Yeah, that's right.
Ricky was a character.
Yep.
Yeah.
He had that one thing that he had like as a running gag where he had someone hold a glass or something, and they had a squeeze bulb, you know, yeah. that would fill up the glass or something each time. And that broke, and I found one. This is before the internet, and I'd found one and ordered it and received it, and I was going to give that to him as a gift, and he passed and never got a chance to.
Yeah.
You said that he died. I'd forgotten that actually on the operating table.
He was having open-heart surgery of some sort, I stayed in touch with him in the last years through our friend Bob Kenny. You probably know Bob he's in Mississippi, Tupelo, Mississippi. He and Bob and Nikki, his wife. He is a person who has worked continuously.
Okay,
probably for the 40 or 50 years that I've been in it.
Yeah,
and always he played the Playboy circuits and then the big those festivals here and there, under these hills, things like that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. He worked constantly, he's a good friend. I haven't been in touch with Bob or Nikki in a long time.
Bob Kenny. You said, is that who you're talking about? Kenny?
No, Nikki.
Oh, Nikki, sorry.
Nikki, his wife, N-I-K-K-I.
Oh, Bob lady. And Nikki. I'm
yeah,
saying.
And
yeah.
Nikki.
Yeah.
And he was, I can't tell that one. He was a character, a real character.
Yeah. What can you tell?
Oh, well, let's see. What did he do? He was always doing something, you know.
Yeah.
He always had a plan or a scheme, But he did come down with some heart trouble and was going to be a repair in there, an open heart repair.
Yeah,
and he died on the table, unfortunately.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So there must have been a good bit more that they had not expected
once they got there.
Yeah.
Now you were telling me also just beforehand about where you guys used to travel, and he loved to drive. Ricky would love to drive.
Oh, Ricky, yeah. Well, it was in California. I was talking to Ricky or something about I'm going to run on down to Florida, and he said, "Well, I'll be out of town a couple of weeks," and he said, "Well, where are you going?" I said, "Well, I'm in Orlando. My sister lives there, and then I'm going on down to Miami to do some things." And he said, "Oh, well, I'm going out there same time. Why don't you ride with me?" And I said, "Well, I can just catch a plane, Ricky."
Yeah.
He said, no, come on, ride with me. And so I got in the car with him, and Ricky drove continuously for 36 hours or so.
Nonsense.
And was just fresh as a daisy. I mean, we got to Orlando. I was dragging my poor, tired rear end out of the car.
Yeah.
And saying, "Ricky, I'm going to have to take a nap a little bit." He said, "Well, no, I'm going to head on." I said, "What?" He got back in the car and drove on down to Miami from Orlando. He was amazing.
Wow. Never slept.
Never slept.
Wow.
Maybe that's what did him in.
could. He never rested.
Oh, man.
He really was quite a guy.
He was.
One of a kind, certainly.
Oh, yes.
Also, that mentioned about Phyllis Diller, that she was a famous comedian, and that did you meet her in California also, or how'd that come about, that relationship?
No, I was in a review show in Hot Springs, Arkansas, a place called the Vapors.
The Vapors
was the
okay.
name of the club.
Okay.
Yeah, and she was in the main room. We had a main room and a small room.
Yeah.
And I was in a little review in a small room.
And she was a big name at the
time.
Oh,
big name, yeah. Mm-hmm. And
it's like Bob Hope, basically. I mean, she was just like right.
Oh, yeah.
Up there,
She did 8 movies with Bob Hope.
Oh,
for
did
example.
She?
Yeah.
Okay.
But anyway, she she saw the act in she came over to look at the acts and things. She saw me and hired me for a month or two later to come up to Monroeville, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And at a very good club there. I think it was Holiday House or something like that was the name of the club.
Mm-hmm.
Terrific club. For $20, the people could come in, have dinner, see a show, a complete show,
right?
Dance, a dance band, music. It was just a whole evening of entertainment.
Wow.
And
this would have been in the 60s, roughly?
Yeah, yeah, okay. Or early 70s.
50s, one of the, 70s, yeah. Okay.
Maybe 60s, late 60s. But anyway, that's how I met her.
Uh-huh.
And she kept hiring me after that. You know, yeah. It went over very well. I was very fortunate.
And how many years did you work with her?
Oh, God, 45 years off and on.
That's amazing. Yeah. And travel all over and did cruise ships and things. I guess she did cruises.
Oh,
with
yeah.
You?
Did cruises right? Sometimes. Mm-hmm. I was on two or three cruises with her, I guess, mm-hmm. Over the years.
Right.
If she saw a problem where she needed help, she'd bring me along. And,
yeah.
And then I'd do the act there. And, gosh, we did tons and tons of shows. I mean, she was one of the busiest performers in the world.
She
and,
a big name.
She is one of the very good people.
Yeah.
What you saw was what you get.
Okay.
The laugh was real.
Yeah.
For example, she never made anything of it, but she was one of the people in the entertainment business who put things back.
Yeah, she gave back.
She'd take out. A lot of us in it will just take everything they can and mm-hmm. run, mm-hmm. but she put things back. And
yeah.
Lord knows, I can on a wall in one of her offices in L.A. She had a slide rule,
okay.
framed.
That's right.
And it was I think he was an aeronautical engineer.
Yeah.
And she had helped him somehow, and he'd gotten tired of his job, and had gotten him work. Doing what you're doing, basically, mm-hmm. the podcast of its day.
Okay.
He became a speaker and all sorts of, and this never came out.
Huh.
No one ever knew of the connection. And she said, no, you don't say anything about me. Just go in there. Because he was a very funny man.
Yes.
Huh. She was an amazing person and a lot of fun.
Yeah.
One that she tells on herself was terrific. She and her husband and her secretary had gone over to Vegas
mm-hmm.
and tried to get there in time for the first show, but were running late. And boy, they were in a huge hurry.
Yeah,
and so they swept into the airport, grabbed the Cadillac, the white Cadillac
yeah.
rental, and gone over to the. Wherever it was, probably, where'd she play a lot? Tropicana, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Zipped into the thing, jumped out of the car, ran inside, barely made it on stage, you know.
She never had to worry about her hair, I'm sure.
Oh, well. She, and then afterwards, I said, the idea was, let's all go get some dinner or something. Go have a nice time, look around. It was about
right.
midnight by then. And so into the car, we go with the Cadillac and Ward, her husband, driving, if you could call it that, wandering down the main streets.
And okay.
Constantly hearing gasps and wheezes in the rest of the car. And it arrived back at the about 2 a.m, I guess, or 3, at the big porte-cochere again at the hotel.
Yeah.
The Tropicana, but before it got there, the secretary, Carol Eschler, was in the back seat and says, is anybody eating candy up front?
Hmm.
I had some candy wrappers back here. He said, no, there's a rental car, too. I thought, my
right.
gosh.
Right.
How about, hey, here's a toy airplane. And then it began to dawn.
Uh-oh.
Wrong car.
Wrong car.
Rushed down to get in the car to
yeah.
go out and have a time. The real Cadillac was in the garage somewhere, and someone else's Cadillac had driven up, and the doors were open, the engine was running, everything
the
was
valet,
set.
You thought that was theirs?
Yeah, so it was a stolen car episode. So we just drove very carefully around
yeah.
and sneaked around into the garage and sneaked out of the car and into a side door into the thing so no one would see, left the engine running and the doors open, and
yeah.
We never heard from it. Nothing was ever said. But I always wondered about those people. They came down and got in a rental car and drove
yeah.
all over town.
Where's my son's toy plane?
So, boy.
Yeah.
But there's all sorts of fun stuff like that.
Yeah.
I mean, these zany things would happen from time to time. But from the back seat, Here's a toy airplane. That sort of began to get people's.
Did she use those stories in, as part of Iraq?
No, never told them.
She didn't?
Never told
them.
Another one was her husband, Ward Donovan, at the time. He bent the car. They had a nice car, and she had a Rolls or something, a Silver Ghost, I think, or something. And he bent the fender. So he would usually drive the car around to the front of the house, you know, when they were going somewhere.
Okay.
But this time he wouldn't be driving in, he would back in so that the driver's door would be on the side away from the front door of the house,
okay,
or the
sense.
Door she'd be getting into the car.
Sure.
Well, this happened for 2 or 3 weeks before she realized, Ward, why are you driving in backwards? Oh, and I've said,
it's been getting easier.
Yeah, it was. And then she did. She went out, sneaked out, and looked around the corner. And sure enough, a bent door.
Oh, that he'd been hiding. Didn't want to see
he'd
that.
He'd been hiding this thing. It had banished it for 2 or 3 weeks. Very well. But it was a lot of fun working with her. She... very generous, very kind person.
And very funny.
Yeah, nothing at all like the harridan that she played.
Yeah, right. Now, as far as some of her material, were you with her when she came up with some of her jokes and things?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. She paid, and it doesn't sound like much, but she would pay $5 for anything that she used. And sometimes she sent somebody $25 or $30. They kept her laughing for a while, $50, whatever.
Yeah.
And she, let's see, what was that one? She had paid this guy $5 for the line, "Never hit the lead car in a funeral procession."
That's funny. That's
a funny line, yeah.
Well,
here in Houston, as a matter of fact, she went on stage, and every bit of this was ad-lib.
Okay.
She, right at the end of the act, she said, one thing I want to leave with you is a driving tip. Never hit the lead car in a funeral procession.
Yeah.
When that stiff rolled out. I never seen that many people in such a bad mood. Hell, you'd have thought I'd killed him. The problem was, it was a cheap funeral. They could only dress the top half of this man. And he said, his wife jumped out of the car, said, "That's all Clyde needed embalming. Look at that." No wonder they couldn't get the lid shut. Now, that was all ad-lib out of her head right there on stage.
Here in Houston, actually.
Wham.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was here in Houston.
At the Shamrock Hotel?
No, the old Windmill Dinner Theater.
Okay.
We played that a couple of times a year for years and years. Uh-huh. You know.
Did she keep that in the act, I guess?
Yeah, it stayed in the act.
Yeah, that's funny.
And others, I can't really. And that others were slightly more risque. Mm-hmm. But
for the time, that was really quite something. What would that have been? You say that probably, I guess the 70s wasn't risque. I mean, they were. It's kind of the beginning of all that.
But, I mean, the laugh would begin to build because no wonder they couldn't get the lid shut.
Yeah.
It would dawn on them slowly.
Exactly, yeah.
It was.
Yeah, there was one that was kind of like that Fielding West had told me recently about a fellow was complaining about having gone to Hawaii and got a pretty intense sunburn, and he felt like that the best thing that can help him was using Viagra. And he said, "Well, what does that do for you?" He said, "Well, it keeps the sheets off my legs."
Oh, wow.
But you had met Phyllis's daughter, I guess, around that
time? Oh, yeah, her daughter Suzanne. Lovely lady, nice girl. You know, it just didn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
I was very recently divorced at the time, and it was just the wrong. It was a bad match.
But you were married for her for a couple of years.
Just about 6 months.
Oh, less than that. Okay.
Or a year, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, very very brief time. And we are speaking terms, I guess.
Now, when you were traveling and doing things like on cruise ships, but did you work overseas and sometimes in places where they had foreign language barriers?
Not really.
Okay.
Most of my stuff was Pacific Rim and South America, Central America, you know, yeah. those things on the cruise ships.
Okay.
And the Caribbean, you know.
Yeah.
One up and down the coast. One was picked up the ship in New York, went around and back around to, Montreal, mm-hmm. came back down the inland waterway.
Okay.
And Montreal was wonderful.
Yeah.
And before it, Quebec, what a beautiful city.
That's where they're going to have FISM next year in 2021.
Oh, that, yeah. they're so lucky. That mm-hmm. big old magnificent hotel at the
beautiful.
Top.
Yeah.
Yeah. But actually, I never played Europe.
Oh, you haven't?
No.
Okay.
Never did. I had a few people were asking about it. There was some lady who was an agent. I can't remember her name. She called and asked me, but the problem was the birds.
Once again, because of the quarantine, you mean?
Well, it wasn't so much that. It was there were just regulations. I'm not even sure what it was. Hmm. There was one magician. I've forgotten who he was, but he was a tough guy. He went to Italy.
Yeah.
And hid the birds. Mm-hmm. And then he got on the train, and the birds were in his muse in a little room or something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And the conductor came by and said, you can't have the birds. He said, I've got the birds. Get out.
Yeah.
And so he came back and he said, well, it'll be $20.
For the birds.
And he said, get out. And he said, it'll be $50. 10 minutes later, $50 for the birds. And it had gotten up to about $200 or $300,
oh my God.
American
yeah.
only.
Uh-huh.
And by the time they arrived at the train, he said, I'll see you when we get to Genoa, wherever they were going. And he jumped off the train with the birds and was walking away. And the conductor is, $50 of birds. I didn't have the guts to do that. I just didn't.
Well, I remember years ago hearing Johnny Thompson talk about when he was traveling with birds and he would just have them loaded.
Yeah. Johnny and his wife.
Pam.
Pam, she had him in that big purse.
Your wife's name's Pam, so how can you forget that name?
Yeah, Pam. Pam had that big, great big purse.
Yeah,
and she had birds in it to begin with, and then later on had the dog in it.
Yes,
always had the dog in the purse.
Yeah,
Johnny, I'd they always my agent down in South thing. I forgot Herb Marks, I think his name was.
Mm-hmm.
He'd always threaten me with Johnny Thompson because Johnny was playing. When I was at one of the hotels along the beach, Johnny was over at that big hotel on, the island, the closest Bahama island.
Nassau?
No, it was the other one. Grand Bahama.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful place.
Yeah.
And he's talking about how wonderful he is, how good he is. I'd never seen his act.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, there's always Johnny Thompson.
He would threaten you.
He threatened me for years with Johnny Thompson. And Johnny, of course, is a great guy.
Sure.
You know, he's about as good as they come, really. Yeah.
And you finally got to know him and meet him and be good friends?
Well, I met him here and there, run into him in various venues around the world.
I wonder if they were threatening him, saying, well, we've always got Mercer Helms.
No, I was brand new in the act.
I
was still making mistakes.
Okay.
Hopefully not noticeable ones. But,
did you know Channing Pollock?
Never met him.
Really? Okay.
I think I shook hands. Hello, Mr. Pollock. It's nice to meet you, you know.
Okay.
But it was at the castle, I think, one night.
Mm-hmm.
He was in. You know, he came in from time to time.
And saw your act?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah. His act was probably, I liked his act better than mine. In fact, I loved his idea of the man and the birds.
What was that?
No props.
Okay.
Just the man and the birds.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he even had a table or anything. Hmm. He and his wife. And that was, and I tried to get as close pinned down to that as I could.
Yeah.
And I ended up with a prop stand and a cage.
Yeah, to put the birds in.
Yeah. Yeah. The birds are just to get rid of props as I used them.
Yes.
I toss them over to onto the table. And the cage, of course, was I can't remember his name now. He had the floating piano.
Norm Nielsen?
Norm Nielsen. Sure.
It's
a Norm Nielsen cage.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the best piece of magical equipment I have ever seen in my life.
Vanishing bird cage?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was
well
the
made.
Best. Oh, my God. Beautifully made. I've still got it.
Do you?
It's back in the back here in my closet with the rest of the act.
Which you stopped performing in 07, you said?
Oh, yeah, about... Well, I didn't stop performing. I went ahead and did, there's a guy I met named Valentine. He owned Circus Valentine, which was a phone room type operation all around Central Texas. Uh-huh. And so I played that whenever I could. Mm-hmm. And I played a lot of local things during a lot of those years when I wasn't with Phyllis or with, you know, something. You know. And it, let me think, it was, brain checked out.
That's okay.
brain failure. Let's see. John, I've forgotten where I was in there.
Do you, you're saying
how is your editing doing?
Go back to that. I was talking about Channing Pollock, and then you were I was going to ask you about Dove Dust. I mean, I know some people like David Oliver, you know, had lung transplant because he was living with doves. And did you ever have any problems with doves? I mean, some people no longer use doves because of that Dove Dust.
I never had that. When I would get somewhere, I'd line a drawer with newspaper.
Yeah.
And I had some folding cardboard cages. Mm-hmm. Piece of chicken wire, you know, taped on the front of a fold flat sort of accordion type thing made of lightweight cardboard.
That you'd carry with you.
That I'd carry with me.
What about when you lived in, an apartment or home? Did you have the doves in the room?
Oh, yeah. Well, not in the same room. I'd have them in a bathroom or something or in a garage or, you know.
Okay.
And I don't think I ever had any problem with them. I never was... that I know of, allergic to them or anything.
Yeah.
And I'd never heard of Dove Dust until just now.
Okay.
I think I was thinking of poof and then poo-doo-doo-doo-doo.
Oh,
glitter, 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 glitter.
Yes. Yeah. Thinking, no.
Which is a great idea.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, by the way, you're talking about podcast things. Last night I was fiddling around on YouTube.
Yeah.
And I saw this thing. It's the world's best coin trick.
Okay.
If you get a chance, look it up. Okay. Oh, my God. The guy is wonderful. He's working barehanded, bare-armed, at a bare-top table, doing the most incredible things with two or three different coins. Hmm. And we'd have one here, and he'd go, gone. I mean, I mean, it looked like genius to me.
It looked like video editing magic,
no,
but it's
not. No, it didn't at all.
Okay.
He would bam on the tabletop, nothing. And it wasn't in his hand either. You know, it was just really, it was amazing. I don't think I've ever seen that level of coin work. Hmm. Yeah. But it was called the world's best coin trick.
I have to go back and look for that.
Yeah, that'd be worth seeing.
You're still, even though not performing, still actively interested in magic and following it like that then?
Well, I do, but I don't. The career's over.
Okay.
I mean, it's...
hey, you're saying you're doing phone room shows.
This fall that I had pretty well ended that.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a little trouble getting around, and all that leaping around I do with a zombie. Everything I did was high energy.
Yeah.
I mean, Neil Foster could just do wonderful things with zombie, and then later on Dale Solwack used Neil. Neil taught him.
At Chavez School.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I think they were both Chavez. Yeah, he was Chavez, but it was actually it was beautifully done. But mine. When the ball would float, it would drag me into the air with it.
Okay.
And it would look like it was just completely out of control.
Yeah.
The entire, not all the way through. I do a two things that would make people laugh, or run it over the top of the arm and down underneath, back over the top, you know, then the vanishing ball at the end.
Right.
Which is one of the few uses for the prop stand that I had, you know.
To vanish the
vanishing
ball.
Across a little thing. And it's amazing.
Right.
Magic is amazing because people see what they want to see in a way. My prop stand had on the back of it sort of a bag. that was held in place by a wire or something, just an open bag. And the bag came down about this far below
about
the
foot.
Lowest level of the prop stand and went back that far. So when I was working in the round or anything like that or on thrust stages, it's clearly in view.
Yeah. But it was a black velvet bag.
Just, well, it wasn't even a black artifact. It was just there, and it wasn't noticed.
Okay.
And I used it to vanish, come across the top of it and drop the ball as I came across the top of that thing.
Yeah.
Because I'd be walking across the stage.
Sure.
And somehow I never got taken on it, made on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. How'd you come up with that idea? Was that something you just...
No, I had to have a good finish. Mm-hmm. For the zombie and I had been using things like a couple of really good quality spring flowers, pow, two bouquets, that sort of thing,
right?
But this seemed to be a more logical thing,
right?
It's just gone,
right? Yeah, it just vanished, and people weren't even thinking of the bag because it's been in full view.
I'm holding the cloth in a basic shape, and the ball is on its stick,
right?
And you just drop stick, ball, and everything down into the
bag.
Into the bag.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it worked fine.
Yeah. Right.
If you see the act sometime on something, take a look. You see the move. Yeah.
Is your act on YouTube? You got someplace out there?
The only one I've got, I think, was made in Canada. It was the one where I ended up on a performing surface, or maybe it was Chicago, the size of this rug.
Okay.
I mean, it was just completely
about 8 by 12.
Squeezed in, and it's not a very good show thing. I mean, I'd rather have been on a nightclub stage or a stage, you know, and in front of a band or, something like that. But it's the only one I've got. I don't know what happened to all the others. I would send them to people.
Mm-hmm. That was your promo tape that you had sent out back then.
Yeah. You saw it back then?
I have it. No, that's what I was going to say. Is it actually out on YouTube and available?
No, I just made copies and sent them to agents and things. Okay.
You said you had kind of a profession-ending injury with your leg. What was exactly something that happened?
Well, we were still unpacking here.
Yeah.
And I went down to the storage place to pick up some more boxes to bring back up here, and they were soaping the floor, in a smooth concrete in building, and the legs just went out from under me. This one went over and down, and it severed the right quadriplex tendon, which is a pretty bad one to bust. It was completely severed right here.
Wow!
And it hadn't totally recovered. I still have problems, walking distances, and it's always hurting, sort of thing. But, I mean, I'm lucky if that's all that's wrong with me. I'm 86 and the heart's working.
Yeah, that's right.
Everything's thumping along.
It's still doing some traveling and getting around, but just not doing the dove act or anything anymore.
Well, no, it's too much jumping around. I mean, it's high. You've seen me work.
Yeah,
it's high energy, as much as I could possibly put into it for whatever stage I'm on.
Sure. You know. What'd you do with your doves, by the way?
I gave them to a local magician, a real nice guy. He worked at Magic Island. And I'll try to remember his name. He has a magic school now. He teaches people. He lives over on the east side of town somewhere.
But you give it to him, and he was not.
I gave him the birds.
Not Kurt Miller, was
he? He had a whole big set of cages of birds. He raised birds, and he sold them and stuff. And so I just took them out there and gave them to him.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. So at least that they continued on.
They were tame.
Did you train?
Could use them.
Train your doves as well?
Well, there's not much training you can do with a bird.
Well, because I've talked to Lance Burton, and I know that he'd trained birds to land on the. His light pole or whatever, and you throw them out in the audience. I know Amos Levkovich, had him some trained.
Yeah, I know it. I never could do that. I
remember working with Amos, seeing him at the island. He had a great show.
No, I don't think I did.
You never did see him? No. Yeah, okay. Great.
But I have, by accident, had one just take off, fly all the way around the room, and I get my hand up, and he landed on it. But that's very, very seldom.
But you really didn't work with him as far as trying to train them to do
something. You train them to trust you.
Okay. Yeah.
They won't fly very far away from.
If they know whenever you're going to come near them.
They'll come back. If they see something to land on, they'll come back. Yeah. I opened the act with a dove from balloon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I blow up a balloon, pop, and there's
your first dove. First
and
dove.
He's flying in the air right there.
Yeah.
So he's completely free.
Yeah.
And they usually just hover right there. Using sometimes they go up 6 or 7 feet and then come back down slowly, which is pretty when they
That'd
do
be pretty.
That.
Was that like a invisible dove harness kind of a thing that you used back then?
No, it's a sleeve.
Oh, the sleeve, coming out of the sleeve, okay.
The sleeve, the right sleeve is cut slightly larger.
Okay.
Than the left sleeve, so there's room for the bird.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the bird is up the sleeve, and there's enough
room
around the bird with the black
That's why it has to be the opening.
Mm-hmm. To hide anything that could be seen from the front, for example.
Okay.
Down through the front. And the bird, the move is not this, but to produce the bird is this.
You jerk your arm back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it stays there midair.
The bird stays in midair.
Gotcha. Okay.
And the impression is that he came out of the balloon.
Yes.
He's right where the balloon was.
Right.
And there's nothing else near.
Gotcha. Okay.
And, it's a darned effective thing,
yeah,
really,
it's a great
because
opening.
It looks like he was in the balloon. Where else could he have come from?
Right. So it's really not so much of you flinging the bird from your sleeve so much as it is
the
pulling your arm back
quickly
that left the bird in midair, basically.
Yeah. Like that. Yeah,
So it was really not in any kind of a harness at all. It was just kind of in the pocket of your sleeve. Yeah. How long take you to load? How many doves did you
six.
Do six? Yeah.
Yeah.
Did it take long to load them?
Not too bad.
Okay.
5 minutes, maybe, I guess, maybe. There's a sleeve bird. There was one on each side. One was, this was two of them, I think, were built around the silk trick. You know, the middle one.
Oh, 20th century silk.
20th century, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I used a changeback.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Of all things.
Yeah.
And magicians would come up to me and say, I never knew what to do with a change bag until I saw that.
Yeah.
And the secret is just you move the bag by the tassel. You don't move the top.
Okay.
You move the tassel.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah,
that's clever.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just simple handling things. It, it happens if I do first 1,000 shows or so, you begin to round out a little
That's right.
bit. Yeah.
Get these little subtleties. It's like, well, why wasn't I doing that before?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff in there. Oh, yeah. Oh, I ended it with the bag, the black bag.
Yeah, that was empty, and you put your hands through it. And
put the hands through it, mm-hmm. cross your wrists, turn it inside out.
Right.
Then lift the bag away from your hand, and there's a bird.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Again, you don't reach in the bag and get the bird. You lift the bag away.
Away from the bird, leaving the bird there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Each of those things are just...
They're just little things, but if you reach in the bag, you say it's a trick bag.
Yeah.
But I've never had anybody... Somehow, if you do this, how'd you get that... Where'd it come from?
Yeah,
where'd it come from?
As opposed to being... Because you forget about the bag because you're moving the bag away from that. Yeah, it's just a subtle thing as opposed to the way
then
around.
Then I ended with the Norm Nielsen cage.
Vanishing bird cage. Yeah. Beautiful thing. Beautiful thing. Interesting.
Yeah.
I recall also... Some years ago, I was going to be putting together some sort of, I don't remember if it was an article or a book, that I was asking people about ideas for tips from magicians.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to a lot of professionals who had come through the Magic Island, and I had forgotten pretty much everyone's ideas except for yours, that you had given me an idea and a tip that I have not forgotten, and one that I pass on when people ask me also, if you got any piece of advice. And that advice was, never leave your wallet in the dressing room. You taught me
I learned that.
That
the hard way.
What
happened in Philadelphia, I believe.
Okay.
I was on the Mike Douglas show or something.
And uh-huh.
It cost me one of the first of the the digital watches.
Oh, sure.
I had one of those and my wallet.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a safe enough thing. But a band was also on the show that day.
Mm-hmm.
And
sharing a dressing room?
No, but there were lots and lots of people and a lot of kids.
Coming and going.
Too, you know, and I hate to sound like I'm being... Yeah, probably one of the kids saw something and said, "Hey, why didn't I think that? I like that."
Yeah.
You know.
And you never saw it again.
Can't blame them. No, yeah. I didn't even complain.
Yeah. You know, but you learned a lesson.
Yeah, learned a lesson. Never leave your wallet in the dressing room.
Yep, good advice.
Oh.
I imagine you've had all kinds of dressing rooms, as we all have, you know, everything from a toilet, bathroom.
Yeah. Well, you're dressing in a men's room that has a toilet and a lavatory. Mm-hmm. Now, how in the world do you put props together, get things set, and you're going to drop it in the toilet or in the lavatory sooner or later because it's just going to happen.
Any suggestions how to avoid that?
None.
Okay.
It's never happened, thank goodness. I've dropped and caught it and had a wet corner on the zombie cloth or something one time.
Yeah. But I would just think there might be something that you could place over the toilet or something. So that wouldn't
actually,
the
prop case itself was too large because the dressing room was like that little bay window area you're sitting in there. That was the... And also, almost every dressing room I ever dressed in, it was a men's room or something.
Yeah.
So I'd be there setting up these props, and these guys would come in and do their business.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And sometimes it was very disturbing. It was.
Yeah. And they'd have conversations with you or whatever.
Yeah, who are you?
Yeah, I'm the act.
I'm the act.
Yeah, pretty funny. Well, speaking of tips, and we start to wrap up then over here, I wanted to ask you one last question. The name of my podcast is called The Magic Word, and so I always like to know what your philosophy of life is. You know, that have lived a full life and performed a lot of places and known a lot of people and done a lot of things. And so what is it that you live by? What is your magic word or phrase?
Oh, my gosh. I don't...
What's important in your life right now when you wake up each morning? It's like, this is what makes me get out of bed.
My wife.
Oh, there you go.
This lovely lady who I love dearly.
Yeah.
And really, that is one thing.
Yeah.
There's nothing that can manage or come anywhere close to the companionship and the love between a well-matched couple.
Mm-hmm.
You probably know that.
I do.
And I lost the same thing. Mm-hmm. And I thought my life was over.
Yeah.
I thought that's the end. That's it. But it wasn't. I met Pam.
Mm-hmm.
And so always keep an eye out for potential. I don't know exactly, but there are a bunch of those kind of things. I can't remember one of them right now. They're never do so and so.
Yeah, right.
Don't forget the whatever. Yeah. But anyway, this has been a lot of fun.
Well, good.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mercer. It's really good to reconnect and to hear the stories and things to share with a younger generation who didn't know the kinds of things that you had done. And also for those of us who have known you for a long number of years who haven't heard your voice, I'm sure that they'll be writing in to say, hey, thanks for having Mercer on. And again, so glad that you're doing well. Well, again, thanks very much, Mercer. I appreciate your time.
It's really
been fantastic.
Yeah.
Good getting back together. Thanks for sharing all those stories.
Well.
So for the Magic Word podcast here in Houston, Texas, that was Mercer Helms. This is Scotty out. Thank you, Mercer. That was a lot of fun. It sure was great catching up after all these years, and now I'm going to make it a priority not to wait so long to get back together with you, and also perhaps as a suggestion for all of those of you out there who are listening that you may not have connected with some old friends in a while, that you might want to make it a priority also in your life to go back and try to renew those friendships and see what has been going on, and that we shouldn't let these people in our lives actually who have gone out of our lives, leave them forever. We need to get back together and reconnect. So I think reconnection is really key here. Well, again, thank you very much, Mercer, and thank you, listeners, for coming back and listening. And thank you also to, again, our sponsor, who is themagicbookshop.com. One more thing I wanted to remind you, by the way, is that they not only have old books available, but they also have new books that are out there then, too. And they run contests from time to time. And if you go to their website right now and just click on, there's a tab, I think, that has something to do with, it says enter the contest. Right now, they've got a contest where that you can win Daryl's book, The
Ambitious Card Omnibus, and that will be awarded, and the winner will be announced on March the 15th on their website. So, again, that's going to be a free book, free opportunity for you to get a book. So just go over there and check them out. Again, that's themagicbookshop.com, and thank you, Eric, for providing that. And week to week, he does run contests, so you need to keep going back and checking to see what's going to be coming up each week. And don't forget, you get a 15% discount when you buy something, whether it's a new book or an old book. And as you check out, just use Magic Word in the promo code. Well, I think that's probably going to be about it, I think, to wrap up here for this week. And so until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember to keep your family first. And another piece of good advice, never leave your wallet in the dressing room. This is Scotty out.